Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What if we had a show about solutions?
You know, a repair manual for the real world.
Not the same old left versus right.
I am right,
I'm right.
And you are wrong.
Boring.
Yeah, something new.
Yeah, something new. How to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
How do we fix it?
How do we fix it?
My credit card debt is overwhelming.
And so many people are up to their ears in debt.
I want to know, Jim.
How do we fix it? The average U.S. household credit card debt is over $15,000, according to the Federal Reserve.
That's a lot of money, considering credit card interest rates are so high. I mean, after all, credit cards are a lousy way to borrow money.
Absolutely. And nearly half of all households have some credit card debt, and millions have a lot more than they can afford.
Joining us today on How Do We Fix It is someone who's seen the problem from both sides. She once had way too much debt personally and then paid it off and is now a credit card expert.
Beverly Harzog is the author of two books. One is called Confessions of a Credit Card Junkie, and Beverly's new one is The Debt Escape Plan, How to Free Yourself from Credit Card Balances, Boost Your Credit Score, and Live Debt-Free.
So let's start with your story, Beverly.
Yeah.
You really messed up.
Yeah, and I was really interested in looking at your bio, Beverly, to learn that you got a degree in accounting, worked as a CPA, but by your mid-20s, you were wildly in debt. In fact, you described your life as being, quote, a total disaster. So what the hell happened?
Yeah, when I got out of college, I had a degree in accounting, got a great job with a corporation, making good money. Actually, this was the first time in my life I had made so much money, and I just kind of went crazy. I did not have a good background in personal finance. I could calculate earnings per share, but I couldn't even balance my checkbook. So I started getting all of these credit card offers in the mail, and they'd say things like on the envelope, "You deserve it. You know, you're fantastic. You earned this card." And so I started buying into the hype, and I thought, yes, I do deserve this. So I started applying for all these cards. Now, within a couple of months, I had 7 credit cards, and within a year or two, they were all maxed out. All maxed out. I mean, right. I was $21,000 in debt.
So what stuff were you buying?
You know, I worked in an office. It was male-dominated back in those days, and I felt like I needed power suits, power accessories, power lunches, power cocktails. So it was just – it was sort of designed to boost my confidence. You know, there's often when your spending gets out of control, it's because there's an emotional element involved. You're trying to fix something that's wrong, okay? And it doesn't work, though. It's very short-term. So I would go out and buy, you know, an expensive designer suit, and I'd feel great for a couple of days, but then I would need something else to pick me back up.
Do you think a lot of people do that?
I think a lot of people do. They're all different reasons, though. Mm-hmm. It's partly emotional and partly because people don't have structure in place. They don't really understand how to stay out of trouble.
Right. Now, you have a number of warning signs for people. What are some of the things that people should be aware of, and maybe they're starting to go down that path?
Okay, one of the biggies is head in sand syndrome, is what I call it. And that is when you're not even acknowledging what you're doing. And this was happening to me when I was getting into credit card debt. I ignored the problem. I knew it was getting bigger, and I just ignored it. At one point, I stopped going to my mailbox, mm-hmm. because I just didn't want to see I didn't want to see the bills. Mm-hmm. I stopped answering the phone. Debt collectors were starting to call
Whoa,
me.
Whoa, debt collectors were.
Yes, yeah. It was getting bad. And I had my rock bottom moment. And that's really what kind of jolted me back into reality.
So that rock bottom moment, it sounds so much like what you hear in people's stories of recovery from some kind of chemical dependency. What was it like?
You know, it's very similar to that. You know, the name of my book was Credit Junkie. And the reason is because, you know, when you get addicted to credit and shopping, it is like a drug. And there were withdrawal symptoms when you try to stop. Now, you know, when I had my rock bottom moment, because I had trouble stopping, okay, but I think most people in debt have a rock bottom moment, just like maybe a drug addict might. I was at the mall, as I was frequently back in those days, and I was in my favorite. I was at my favorite department store, and I was trying to buy a pair of Ralph Lauren jeans. And so I was standing in line. It was my turn. I hand over my credit card, and they go, "Sorry, ma'am, your card has been denied." And I had been over my limit. I hadn't paid my bills on time. Remember, I was in serious denial. I didn't even know that all of this was happening behind the scenes. So that was my moment, and it was a retail card, for crying out loud. You have to be such a disaster to lose a retail card. So, you know, I went home that night. I got a glass of Chardonnay for courage, and I started spreading out all my bills and started staring down my debt. Mm-hmm. So your rock bottom moment often leads to that. And my hope for many people is that they won't even have to hit that that low, that they'll just start staring right. down their debt.
Yes, yes. Learn from my mistakes. So what was that plan that got you out of that significant amount of debt? Mm-hmm.
Well, I stopped using credit cards, partly because I had to. No one wanted to give me credit anymore. I still had one that was usable, but I decided, no, I am not going to put anything else on a credit card. And that's really one of the first steps you have to do. And I go over this in my book. Stop using credit cards if you're in debt. So during that time, I used cash. I still had a debit card connected with my checking account. I cut expenses dramatically. Now, I was single at the time and had no kids, so it was easier for me to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every night because I didn't have to worry about, you know, feeding a family. So, you know, it depends on your particular circumstances to what you can cut out and what your plan can be.
And, you know, one thing you've also talked about is getting a little extra income. And you said it's easier than people might think, like, to get a second job. What are some of the things people have done that you feel, you know, maybe surprised mm-hmm. them that it wasn't as hard to do as they thought it would be?
You know, it doesn't always entail getting a second job because usually people cringe, you know, because when you're in debt, you're like over your head anyway, and you have a very overwhelmed feeling. But there are certain things you can do. One thing I did was I asked for a raise. And, you know, depending on what your circumstances are and how long it's been, you know, if it's been a long time since you've had a raise and you do a great job, ask, even if it's for a small amount. I've had friends.
You know, if I can just break in, as someone who's employed a lot of people over the years, there's an old cliche that women are less likely to ask for raises mm-hmm. than men. I think there's some truth to that. But it's totally okay to go in and say, I need to raise my income. This is a personal goal mm-hmm. of mine. And, mm-hmm. and make that employer think a little harder about how valuable you are.
Exactly. You know, I did go in and ask for a raise, and, you know, I didn't say I need the money. I'd had the script in my head. I had rehearsed it. And, you know, I said, I've done this, and this for the company, and I haven't had a raise in, you know, a certain amount of time, and I think I deserve an increase at this point. And as you just suggested, people are surprised by that because I think that sometimes they think they have to wait for things to come to them. But no, you've got to go out and grab things. And if that doesn't work out, look for another job. I mean, you do not have to stay at that company. If you've got a 401k and you're otherwise happy, there are other choices, too, that you can work on. I know friends that were in debt and sold some things on eBay. It's interesting, too, to sell some of the things that you collected when you were on a spending spree and that you don't even really need. So there are all kinds of things like that. And, you know, I think whether it's boosting your income or reducing expenses, no idea is too outrageous to think about.
You know, it's funny talking about selling things on eBay. My wife and I recently downsized to a smaller house, and And there was so much stuff, you know, old cameras, beautiful old 35 millimeter cameras, Leicas and stuff that we had gotten from various relatives. And eBay is a great way to finding those people who are willing to pay top dollar for that thing that's just sitting in your closet.
Exactly. People collect all kinds of unusual
everything,
things.
Everything. There's little subcultures around, like old cameras, so many things that aren't necessarily that valuable to the rest of us.
Right. It's amazing what people will buy. So, I mean, that's just one little suggestion. But, you know, if you brainstorm and think about it, you know, you'll come up with all kinds of ideas. Because I know getting to a second job, especially if you've got kids, that's difficult. And, you know, the debt escape plan doesn't require that you increase your income. As long as you reduce expenses somewhere and you can apply that to the minimum payment on your target debt.
You've described allowing yourself to carry a balance on your cards from month to month is sort of the gateway drug towards bigger problems.
You know, I remember when I had my first credit card and I was carrying a balance, at first I was a little bit shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, but it's okay. I'll pay it off next month.
Because I only owe this much this month.
I only owe this much, right. And I can still buy this scarf and then I'll pay it off next month. But that didn't happen and I got used to it. The shock value goes away. That becomes your new normal. And that's when it's dangerous. That's when it's a gateway.
Well, tell us why having a balance on your credit card, in other words, not paying off your credit card in full every month, why that's such a bad idea. Is it largely because credit card interest rates are so high? I mean, gosh, mine's like, I think 19.9% or something.
Right. And I'll bet that's with excellent credit as well.
Sure.
I mean, these days the interest rates are so high. But, you know, the reason is because credit card debt is toxic debt. There is such a thing as good debt if you think about a student loan. At least that's an investment in your future. But credit card debt just means that you're paying much more than you ever intended to pay for everything that you bought. So you want to pay that off as quickly as you can. There's this very ugly thing called compound interest, and it makes your debt get bigger and bigger.
Right. And there's an opportunity cost. If you'd actually saved that money instead, you'd be in compound interest on your investments and we'd work in your favor.
Exactly.
So I think, I guess the very worst thing you can do is to pay your bills late. And then the next worst thing is to pay the minimum balance.
Yes, absolutely. If you do have credit card debt, paying the minimum balance, if you can only do that, it takes a very long time to get out of debt. You're going to pay so much in interest expense, and you're going to feel like you're on a treadmill where you're just kind of running in place, and you're not really making a big dent.
So you've come prepared with some really specific suggestions for people. Why don't we get into that? So take that person who has gotten over their head. What are the key things they can do? How do they fix that problem?
Okay, you know, the most important thing to do, and it's really quite difficult, is to look your debt in the eye and own it, okay?
So don't be in denial.
Don't be in denial. And once you look your debt in the eye, I call it staring down debt. Instead of your debt having power over you, you'll have power over your debt.
So putting it off, the worst thing. So you start with admitting to yourself what the problem is.
Absolutely.
And then, let's move on from that point. What do you do then?
Okay, well, one of the most important things you have to do is to have a budget. And people kind of cringe when I say this. It sounds boring. it sounds difficult, but it's really not. Now, there are so many ways now to automate your budget. And I even provide free worksheets on my website. It does all the calculating for you. You can play around with your budget numbers all you want. And the reason you need that budget is because what we're going to do to get you out of debt is you have to decrease expenses in places. Find ways to increase income. You might be surprised at ways you could do that. And then we'll come up with an amount that you can add to your minimum payment amount on your credit card debt.
So let's get specific. I mean, people have told me there are sites like Mint.com,
yes,
which is pretty good. I keep hearing that one's good. And then also QuickBooks. I mean, there are ways that you can use technology to help you manage your debt and have a little fun with it. I mean, because these sites are pretty cool.
The gamification of budget management.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's not quite as fun as a video game, but there are so many options out there. I personally use Mint, and no, I'm not being paid to say this. Mm-hmm. I really do love it. Mm-hmm. I'm a very visual person, and I talk about this a little bit in my book about learning styles and how you can match your personality and your learning style to the right budget application. And see, this is how people succeed, okay, when they find a system that works for them that they're willing to keep up with, you know, and maintain. That's when you succeed. Too many people feel, you know, overwhelmed, or they don't have the right system in place for themselves. And so that's why some people fall off the wagon and they don't make it.
Now, one thing I love, and this is what you call your debt escape plan, right?
Yes.
So one thing I thought was intriguing was you don't have to give up your latte. I mean, everybody says, like, if you cut out that $3.80 latte every day, you know, you could have X money. Well, why do you say that?
Because if you love your latte, you should keep your latte, really. There are other places you can save that money. I freely admit I am a Starbucks addict. I love my coffee. I grind my own beans. I use a French press. It's just an experience for me. So I don't go out and buy it, but I do spend more on coffee than the average person would. But I cut back in other areas. You know, I don't eat out as often because I do this. I cut back on clothes budget, anything like that. So somebody that decides to keep their latte, that's fine. That's important to you, and you need to take good care of yourself during this process because it's very emotional. But this means that you have to get that $3 somewhere else.
Jim and I are pretty positive guys, and we've so far been talking about all the pitfalls of debt, and oh my goodness, people get into big trouble with credit cards, and a lot of people do. But there's some positive things about credit cards. I know that when my daughter, for instance, is thinking about opening up a yoga studio, and the first thing I said to her is, what's your credit history like? And she said, well, it's okay. And I said, you've got to build a better credit history. And one way to do that is to borrow money. And that's what you're doing with a credit card. So credit cards can help you, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, having an excellent credit history is so important. And what many people don't understand is that it can help you save money in many other areas of your life.
So how does that work exactly?
Okay, it will save you money on health insurance, life insurance, car insurance, mortgage rates, of course. And the reason is because, and this may not be totally fair, but this is how it is. If someone has bad credit, they appear to be more of a risk in terms of health. Or, you know,
or
driving
accidents.
Their car. And that's not particularly fair, but that is how the system works.
But it could well be reflect actual, you know, facts and out there in the world.
Yeah. So the reason I have a few caveats here is because I talk to people every day who are in debt for reasons like medical debt. They had a health crisis or a divorce or, you know, unemployed. Some people are still recovering from the recession. So, you know, I do want to acknowledge that some people got in debt without being reckless.
So you don't want to blame the victim.
Right.
But you can understand why the world works that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because in many cases, there is a correlation. I mean, studies have shown that. So that's why.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
They do it that way.
So what are some of your favorite kind of techniques for for being that power user of a credit card, really, you know, getting the most out of your credit cards.
I love rewards credit cards. Now, I pay my balance in full every month, no exceptions. And it's very important to do that, particularly with rewards credit cards, because the interest rates tend to be higher. But if you have developed sound credit habits and you pay your bill off every month, figure out what kind of rewards credit card might help. Every year, I pay for Christmas out of my cashback rewards. So I use my card for like everyday things, and I pay, you know, the balance back in full. That's really the key.
And then there are other people who like to travel, and, and they use their credit card to earn mileage.
Absolutely. I also have an airline miles card. I rarely pay for airline tickets these days.
I want to return to one of your other suggestions, which is to start rebuilding your credit even while you're still in debt. How do you do that?
Yes, you know, the most important thing to do, and this is just a very straightforward step, pay all of your bills on time, not just your credit card bill. You know, even if it's just a late cell phone bill, that could get reported to the bureaus. A lot of people don't realize this. Payment history is the largest factor in your FICO score.
So the FICO score is your credit score, and
yes,
the bureaus you're talking about, I think there are three big companies that compile your credit history, and they're the ones that are collecting this information. Like, for instance, if there's if there's a late payment.
You know, sometimes the credit bureaus might even have different files on you. Not everybody reports to all three credit bureaus, but most major card issuers will do that.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about different people's different styles and how they approach things. What if you're just a really kind of disorganized, scattered person, like asking for a friend?
Not Jim. No, not me.
Right, right. Okay, my advice for your friend is if this person is actually in debt, then I would say, you know, first look your debt in the eye and own it. Okay,
right.
You have to own that debt. And once you do that, you know, it's important to pick a way to analyze your budget, keep up with your budget, and most important of all, track your spending. If you don't track your spending, and with any good budget application, you're going to be able to do this. You can't possibly stay on budget because you don't know how much you've spent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I got into debt years ago, one of my biggest issues was, well, I didn't have a budget, but I didn't track my spending. And so, you know, things can get out of control in a hurry when you're not doing that.
We should make one other little plug for credit cards, and that is that when you're buying something other than spending cash, they're often better. They have more protections than debit cards do.
Yes, and you know, today we live in a world where there's a new major hacking every week. So it's very important, you know, if you've got good credit and good credit habits, use the credit card, particularly for major purchases. Sometimes you'll get an extended warranty that comes with your card. Sometimes you get purchase protection. Some cards even offer price protection. So if you have the patience to read the fine print about all the perks and benefits you have, you might be surprised at what you have with your card.
I want to go to policy for a moment, because at least until very recently, reading your credit card bill, the small print at the end, is just indecipherable. No ordinary person could possibly understand that. But there's been some progress in that field with something called the CARD Act, I think, that required there to be a bill that people could actually understand. Can you walk us through that?
Yes. A couple of years ago, you know, just before the CARD Act, you know, we got something called the Schumer box, and this was legislation sponsored by Chuck Schumer. And this is a literal box that shows the rates and fees. That was a huge step forward, because people used to have to get a magnifying glass just to find the interest rate. And then came along the Credit Card Act of 2009. They gave us a lot of consumer protections that we needed. I mean, it was like the Wild West out there, really, with credit cards. They could raise your interest rate without any reason at all or any warning. The CARD Act gave consumers, you know, some needed protections.
Mm-hmm. And looking ahead, are there some gaps still, or some areas where you feel that there's some policy changes that could help consumers, or we've got it pretty well covered now?
You know, I think we're in a fairly decent place right now with credit cards. It can always be improved. Okay. And, you know, I know with prepaid cards, they're not credit cards, but they're very, very popular.
How do they work, prepaid cards?
Prepaid cards looks just like your debit card, except it's not connected to a bank account. So you load money on the card and you use that. And usually they come with so many fees. And one of the reasons I bring up prepaid cards is because, you know, they're looking at some legislation now to try to regulate it a little bit more, not go overboard, but do something like they did with credit cards so that the fees are in a box. I remember once I was reviewing a prepaid card and the terms and conditions, it was so tiny and it was sideways. I almost had to lay down on my desk to actually read the fine print on this card. It was ridiculous. So, you know, just getting to the point where we have transparency, and that's really the key with both credit cards and prepaid cards, transparency so that consumers know what they're getting into.
So you have your website, beverlyharzog.com, and you get a lot of people asking you questions. So what are a couple of the ones that come back over and over again?
You know, one of the ones I get asked the most is, how can I fix my credit quickly?
Well, we're doing that here.
Right, right. You know, so I tell them, you know, pay all your bills on time. But another key to boosting it as quickly as you can, it won't happen overnight, but within a couple of months, you'll see an improvement, is keeping a low credit utilization ratio. And that is the amount of credit you've used compared to the amount you have available.
So if you have like $10,000, if you are allowed to borrow $10,000, mm-hmm. say, how much should you borrow?
Like, okay, conventional wisdom is $3,000, okay. 30%. But here's an insider tip. If you really want to boost that score a little bit faster, keep it below 10%, $1,000, which might be hard, but that's the way to do it if you want to boost it in a hurry. So that's one of the questions I get asked a lot. Another one I get asked all the time is, you know, if someone has had a secured card, or even if they just want to add a different rewards card, they want to know what will happen if they close a credit card. I get asked that one all the time. Is that going to hurt their credit score? And the answer to that, I'm going to sound a little bit like a politician, a little wishy-washy, but it all depends. Okay, it depends on how long your credit history is. If you have a shorter credit history, it's going to hurt you a little bit more. But the thing is, okay, we just talked about the credit utilization ratio. A part of your available credit, okay, when you close a credit card, you lose some of that available credit. So that makes your ratio go up. And when your ratio goes up, your credit score is going to go down. So that is the only thing you have to be careful about. And the way to get around that is get your new card before you close that one so that your available credit stays about the same or maybe even improves.
Is there any downside to just having a card that you, as you said, you had an account that you had that you weren't really using? How long will they let you do that?
Okay, these days, probably only a couple of months. So if you're in a situation where you've got debt or for whatever reason you've decided to stop using your credit cards, you know, I encourage you to keep those accounts open unless you are a shopaholic and can't help yourself. So what you should do is maybe, you know, use it for a gym membership. If you've got a gym membership, set it up with an automatic payment so that you're not actually – you know, tempting yourself by using the card, but your card will get used every month and get paid off every month. So that's one way around that, but probably just about a couple of months. And there are even some rewards cards that, you know, I've read in the fine print that if you have inactivity, you might lose your rewards. So this is a new kind of thing to be aware of.
I think what I'd like to do before we go is just review a couple of the action points. So one of your things is staring down your debt, not being in denial, right? I mean, just really grab it by the horns if you have debt problems.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that is, I can't even stress how important that is, because once you do that, you will feel a strange Zen type feeling. You know, it feels like, okay, phew, I'm glad that's over. You know, now I've accepted this. I did it. I have to fix it. And now I can start working on a plan.
And then rebuilding with that plan and just taking
right.
it day by day,
not
biting everything off at once.
Yes. It takes a lot of time and patience. And, you know, I get asked all the time, how can I fix my credit by tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And it just can't happen. And so I want to warn people, too, about scams out there, because when you're in debt or you have a bad credit score for whatever reason, you're very vulnerable, okay? And you really do want to get out of this as fast as you can to stop the pain. So there are a lot of scams out there that will say, we can fix your credit in 48 hours. No one can do that, okay? Mm-hmm. So be very, very careful not to fall into that trap. You can fix your credit yourself.
Yeah. So, and to wrap up, I think it's also, we should give a nod to your great website. It has a lot of tools, resources, BeverlyHarzog.com, including some spreadsheets you can download.
And I'm terrible at spelling. It's H-A-R-Z-O-G.
That's
Beverly
right.
Harzog. Okay. Yes. BeverlyHarzog.com for more information. Jim, I'm really conscious that we're doing this show 7 years after a near financial catastrophe. And one of the lessons of that catastrophe that so many of us took away is we got into too much debt. And I think that one of the reasons we got into too much debt was because of aggressive marketing by banks.
Well, it's so easy for people to fall for this kind of thing. But, you know, I'm going to come on this one back to personal responsibility. Just because somebody wants to market a BMW to you, if you don't have a high income, maybe you should be driving a Chevy. You know, they're not forcing you to. Now, when there's dishonesty in how the cards are presented, you know, there's lack of transparency on rates and that kind of stuff, that's a genuine problem that requires regulation, has been reasonably well regulated.
But we're so deluged by slick marketing. You're
yeah,
cool with that.
That's the water we all swim in. If you allowed your life to be ruled by marketing, you'd also be eating Dunkin' Donuts all day and Tostitas and Snickers bars and soda. And some people do. I don't think the fact that those things are marketed absolves us from responsibility to make smart decisions.
Now, speaking around personal responsibility, maybe it would be a good idea if money education was improved in schools, that kids were presented this problem by their teachers.
You know, I think you're so right about that. And I think there's a weird way in which American education, it's kind of, since we were kids, backed away from being too paternalistic. So you don't get the home ec that you used to get. You don't get the shop classes. When I was literally in sixth grade, we had a unit where we had to learn how to balance a checkbook and how checkbooks worked. And I still remember those lessons. I think every kid should have a class in basic, literally home economics. And because, you know, and kids are getting credit cards and dealing with cell phone bills and stuff at very young ages.
Just on a personal note, I got to say, I wish, as a parent, I'd done a better job of explaining credit cards to my kids. And I think there's a role that parents could play in all this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is a part of life that's actually, as she said, it's pretty complicated. And no one really tries to teach you. It's not necessarily in the banks. It's not really in their interest to teach you too much because they like it when you run up a big balance.
Speaking of the policy questions, Where's your line? What's the line you would draw in terms of policy? Because there's been tremendous pushback from Republicans against the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which
right.
was set up as a result of Dodd-Frank, which was set up as a result of the near banking collapse. I mean, are those regulations generally a good idea, or do they go too far?
I think it's a mix. I mean, you know, it's really interesting. This is off the topic of personal finance, but a study just came out that Dodd-Frank, did it rein in the big banks? No. It made them bigger, and it made life harder for the small-town banks. So once again, you try to regulate a field, and you wind up empowering the already powerful. That's not helping consumers. On the zone of consumer debt, no, I'm suspicious of it. I worry that there'll be mission creep. A good cause, you know, and sensible regulation is definitely needed. But every time a new agency is set up, before long, they've expanded their brief and they're poking into all sorts of areas that really weren't part of the original mission.
There's one area, though, and Beverly mentioned this, the Schumer box, the CARD Act, where I think regulation's a really good idea. And that's when you're going to, whether it be health insurers or credit card companies, and say, for goodness sake, guys, come up with a product where we can understand the terms, understand the interest rates, that it's clear what we're paying for, because that was a complete jumble.
I think that's a great role for government, is enforcing some transparency. Smart economic decisions require good information, and in instruments that get as complicated as credit cards can be, it's easy for the banks to kind of play a little bit of a three-card Monty with the information you really need. So I'm totally on board with that kind of information, because it's helping the consumer make a smart decision. It's not making the decision for the consumer.
And also, I've got to say one other thing, and that is, thank goodness for technology. I mean, credit cards, really, when they came in, I'm old enough to remember when not many people had a credit card, and we had to walk around with wads of cash, and we always made out checks to people, and they took forever to clear. I mean, it's much easier now.
Right.
Deal with money.
Yes, too easy. And I'm going to come back at you with the sort of paranoid libertarian concern. You get on an airplane today, and if you want to buy a sandwich or a beer, you can't pay with cash. There are so many transactions where you have to pay with some kind of card. Why is that a problem? Because it's one more element in our lives where we're forced into a system that kind of keeps track of us, that creates data about us. I voluntarily do this all the time. I'm not super paranoid about my data, but some people might choose to opt out of that. They're making it very hard of opting out of this kind of...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Data-driven economy.
Perhaps, but I think, if you get on the plane, then just bring the food with you.
I don't know about you, Richard, but I'm going to go home and pay off my credit card balance.
Or at the very least, look at what I've been spending my money on.
Yeah, we actually do that. But back on the podcast, we couldn't do this all by ourselves.
Yeah, it's been fun. And one reason why it's been fun is because of our producer, Miranda Schaefer, who, by the way, sometimes is a voice in our ear and says, you got to ask this. You got to ask Beverly Harzog more about that rock bottom moment, for instance. That's Miranda.
Right.
And Joe Plord, our audio engineer. We're going in a new studio this week.
And surrounded by a bunch of guitars and drum sets, we feel right at home.